You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hi, guys. Unofficial UFC Commissioner Nick Pete here, just with a quick message before we start today's podcast. As you all know, Valentine's Day is just around the corner. If your better half is asking you what you would like to make the night a little bit special, I've got a deal for you. Visit Manscaped for all your performance needs. Right now, they've got something called the Performance Package, which includes both shavers, the ball reviver, the gooch preserver, you name it. It's a full package to do the job that you need to make sure that Valentine's night goes swimmingly. And let me just quickly interject here that fact that I used the ball reviver when we were on Fight Island. And I tell you what, my gooch has never been as powder dry in its entire life. That is the ultimate recommendation. I can't say anymore. Visit manscaped.com. Use the code FIGHT20 for 20% off. Enjoy Valentine's night.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 463. We are the Fight Disciples, and this is a little bit back to front this week, because we are fresh off Fight Island. We haven't watched any boxing. So the first podcast of the week is going to be dedicated to the world of UFC. We will do a boxing one, but it's going to take about 24 hours for us to catch up on all the latest news, get some insider gossip, and we'll give it to you on Tuesday of the working week, all right? So this is your only effort from us this week. Fresh out of bed after a few hours, Kip, landing on good old Blighty. We're going to tell you a few tales of what happened over the last 10 days and obviously get stuck into all the fights at the weekend and, of course, what happened last Wednesday too. A few apologies. We did say that we were going to post drunk podcasts, but in all essence, our work schedule were all over the place and we couldn't be arsed. We just thought we'd just get pissed. That's basically what we do, all right? So we'll relay those stories to you now in this particular podcast, all right? If it's the first time you've ever come across us, you can get us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. Our website is fightdisciples.com. I encourage you to get stuck into that because there's loads of stuff on that website of which will keep you up to date with fight sports throughout the course of the week when we're not making podcasts and making false promises that we will do podcasts and then not turn up and do them. All right? We were having a good time. What more can I say? Yeah? That's right, innit, Commissioner? We were having a great time.
It was work hard, play hard all over, wasn't it? Actually, we've had previous trips where we were on it more, but it just felt like days went nowhere, did they? We were just all graft. And then by the time we'd had the graft, it was time for a beer. And then we'd watch some kind of shite football that no one understands anymore. And then it'd be like bomb straight into the next day. So it was non-stop stuff.
Yeah. And now, obviously, you're a big celebrity now. Yeah. You know what I mean? Obviously, you're a big deal now. Do you want to, I suppose we've loads of stories to tell. Tons.
Yeah.
There's a bit of backtracking from me on Michael Chandler, which is going to come up. So, yeah, Ben Chilaberty, I know you're waiting for it, son. I know you're waiting for the big reversal. It's coming. Don't worry. It'll come later on. The humble pie will be eaten. But I think it's only fair that we tell some tales of Fight Island. Now, cast your minds back to the first week of November. We just come back off Fight Island 2. Yeah, we just watched Habib and Gaethje. Habib had retired. And in fact, we were live on the radio that night for TalkSport. Myself, Nick and Dan, we just called the show. And as we were wrapping it up, Nick Pete alluded to a lightweight tournament. All right? That week, we made podcasts, we did shows for BT Sport, and the lightweight tournament momentum gained a little bit of traction, didn't it? You started pushing it down the hill. Fucking hell, you took it to the next level now, aren't you? You took it to the next level now, cop.
I started shoveling it down people's throats, and then the more it played out, the more it became real, and then the more resistance from Dana White, where he was like, mate, Khabib's going to come back. I'm going to have this meeting with Khabib. I'm going to sort everything out. Everything's going to be great. And I thought, oh, Dana's cut my legs from under me here. And then when he come out of that meeting and was like, yeah, Khabib was basically saying, like, you know, someone impressed me. No, he didn't. That's not what Khabib said. Khabib said to Dana, I'm retired and I'm staying retired. And don't come knocking at my door until there's a real competitor out there. So once we knew that had happened, that's when the tournament obviously just took its own, became a real thing then, a real viable target. And then obviously the week was building towards the press conference. And I've got Adam and I've got the crew at BT all in the ear going, you've got to bring it up. You've got to bring it up at the press conference. You've got to bring it up at the press conference. And then, so we were laughing about it on the way there, because just a quick setup, where we were last time, obviously people realised that the last time we were on Fight Island, we had access to the beach, you could walk to the fighters' hotel, you could have a little nose around, my main mania was going jogging, all that kind of stuff. We had a little sense of freedom, but it was different this time because Abu Dhabi's pretty much back to normal over there. People are just coming and going, doing about the daily lives. So what they did was the bubbles were the hotel, the two hotels and the Etihad Arena, obviously private entrance because there was fans on fight night. So basically to get from one hotel to the other, you had to get on a UFC bus and they were all scheduled like a bus timetable, everything else. So we were on the bus and Adam was going to me, you need to say you're the commissioner. You need to get up and say, I am the commissioner of the lightweight tournament. And this is how we have to play it out. I want everyone to confirm they're in. So he's taking it to the next level in my mind. So I'm sitting there at the press conference thinking, all right, I'm going to do it then. Fine. No problem. It was only afterwards that I was thinking that it sunk in that I was like, basically took over the press conference of the biggest pound for pound draw in fight sports by standing up and saying, I've got no, you know, affiliation with the UFC in terms of they have never paid my wages. I've never been on the payroll. I came close to signing with the UFC, as Adam knows, a few years ago. They offered me a contract, but I am not a UFC employee in any way, shape, or form. I'd like to disclose that. So to stand up and go, as the official UFC lightweight tournament commissioner, I would like to ask, and then specifically ask each fighter that they were in, locked into a three-fight deal. And yeah, man, the rest is now history, innit?
That's it.
You become worldwide, mate. You were doing it. Fuck off, right? The day after, check this out, right? The day after, his fucking head was massive, right? He's walking around Abu Dhabi in hotels.
And that's because everyone in the hotel, all the judges and everyone were going, morning, commissioner, that's morning.
It. You name them, they were giving it the big one. The commissioner is in the house. Here he is. And then next thing you know, I turn round just as we were about to do our BT sport obligations that morning. No. The fucking commissioner's on Abu Dhabi TV. He's fucking doing interviews with international telly, explaining his tournament to people. What the fuck are you doing? Yeah, this is how it's going to work out at the weekend. Obviously, if both men come through, they'll probably face each other here. And we've got Charles Oliveira on the other side of the draw. I'm like, have you heard him? Have you heard this fucking idiot over here? But everybody was in, man. Everybody bought in.
Yeah, man.
Even like Dana, by the end of it.
Yeah. Well, everyone was messaging me at the time going, oh, man, you're in deep trouble here. Like, you've pissed Dana, right? I think it was the sign-off at the end, wasn't it? Just saying to Dana.
Dana, you're welcome. You cheeky bastard. Yeah, Dana, you're welcome, mate. Seen a bit.
Well, that was a better sign-off than what you originally said on the bus. You were like, you need to say, Dana, 10%, baby. Imagine if I'd have done that. Oh, my fucking God. There was no way I was doing that because I could just see Dana's face was the face of thunder. Like, for one, you're not an employee, so you can't be the commissioner. And two, no one dictates to me what fight to do next. But obviously I did. So I thought the you're welcome was a little bit more fitting.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. Listen, straight away, the fighters were into it. As people know, Conor McGregor was right in. Everybody else is in. Poor old Dan Hooker signed up for it, not knowing what he was signing up for. But ultimately, it doesn't matter because he's out now anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it was mental. And it was just good the way everyone jumped on the back of it. And, you know, then anyone who mentioned a tournament format, any other media members or people who were in Fight Island or even weren't in Fight Island, some of the ESPN prominent MMA journalists who were like, oh, what about a tournament? Then every fucker on social media was like, whoa, whoa, don't be ransacking Nick Pete's tournaments. Don't be stealing BT Sports tournament now. So that was cool. That was cool.
You even abbreviated your nickname at one point to the commish, introducing yourself as the commish to people. What are you doing? Fucking hell. There you go. This is the beautiful thing, right? And I encourage anybody to do this. Any fight disciple that has been winners since the start, all you need to do is plant a seed in his head. Like, he can't say no to shit. You just plant the seed with him, and he's like going, yeah, man, that'll be fucking wicked, won't it? And then off he goes. It's piss funny.
The way you just press stood conference. Up. The way when you, I sat down.
The way, no, wait.
When I sat down, you just turned to me and went, I can't believe you just went balls deep in on that. And I felt like going, oh, we discussed this on the bus. And you were like, yeah, man, you've got to do it. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. You've got to do it. And then afterwards, you were like, I can't believe you've just done it.
Oh, you're welcome. Best bit, that. You're welcome. Cheeky bastard. The best bit, though, is that afterwards, obviously, Dana comes backstage and we're doing some interviews and stuff. And I flicked the mic in his face. I said, you will have seen my colleague stand up at the press conference yesterday and announce his tournament. He goes, yeah, man, everybody loved it. We're all in. And I'm like going, fucking hell, what have we made here now? So you know full well that the fights that we all want to see are going to get made, and we will get the commissioner's thoughts. That's what we've got to refer to him now. He insists on the podcast. We'll get the commissioner's thoughts as to what happens next in the lightweight division. Who's getting title shots? What's going down? Now, the reason why all these conversations have come about is because of Habib. Habib has retired. Yes. We were there on Fight Island 2. He's retired. We were lucky enough to be with Habib on Fight Island 3 because Umar Nurmagomedov, who was supposed to fight on the 23rd card, he had his fight pulled forward for obvious reasons. He fought on the 20th, made a great UFC debut. Nick Pete's backstage. Right? He's causing fights backstage now. So now he's interviewing Umar, giving it the big one with Umar, singing his praises and what have you, spots me out the corner of his eye and starts making another fight, didn't you? Now you're the commissioner for the World Billiards fucking tournament or whatever.
Well, it was perfect time because obviously on the Wednesday, we were like, right, I'll do backstage interviews. You hang out front. Everything's cool. Sound, man. So I'm doing a couple of backstage interviews with all the Brits involved, like Lerone and people
Jones
like that. And Mason Jones, who are, you know, one victory, one loser there, but both of them were absolutely impeccable on the microphone. And then obviously Umar rocks up. He's just, you know, 9 years to the day or whatever it was, 6 years to the day, whatever it was, that Habib made his debut. He also won by submission in the second round, whatever it was. And Umar, basically his cousin, replicates the exact same finish on the exact same day so many years later. So a wicked narrative there. But so, right, we'll speak to Umar. But then the best thing is Habib rocks up as Umar's translator. And Habib, if you didn't know, like Habib is, and Adam will tell you, Habib is wicked company, man. He's funny, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a wicked little sense of humor, and you can have a giggle with him. So I'm interviewing Umar, and Habib's translating for me. Meanwhile, the main man slips in the background that I can see him there mooching about, waiting to speak to Habib. And I thought, right, we'll do this on air then.
Bear in mind.
So I'm just like, yeah, man.
Bear in mind, I've been trolling him on social media all week, saying, listen, fuck the rematch with Conor and whoever. The real rematch is me and you. You're on Fight Island, I'm on Fight Island, let's go. And the momentum was building on social media. Go on, carry on.
So I then finished the interview with Umar by basically saying to Habib, listen, man, there's my boy over there. We need a billiards rematch. And then I did one thing that you never did and still haven't done on social media. I called him out. I went, you cheated last time.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. Yeah,
you cheated last time, Habib. So, but then this is the best bit. And if you haven't seen it, you've got to go and find it. So then Adam comes in and he's like, and then I don't know whether you go to bump fist and Habib still talking or whatever it was.
What he did, he said, his reaction to the call out of the billiards rematch, he then says, again, brilliant company, funny as fuck, really witty lad. He turned around and he went, no, he's got to show me something. He's got to beat somebody.
Sorry, yes, which is what Dana said. He said about the lightweights. He said, someone's got to impress me, basically. And he said the same thing about Adam, which was wicked. And then you then go in for what?
So I landed a 1-2 on him, mate. No, I landed a 1-2 on him. That's what I did.
You kind of go in for a bump fist kind of shoulder touch or whatever it is. And then mid-flow, you just turn it into this, 1-2 to Habib's shoulder, which is the most random thing in the world. Mate. You just go 1-2, slip backwards. And I'm like, what's he doing? And then I'm watching it thinking, he's absolutely mental. Brilliant.
Habib took it though. Mate,
I'm not surprised.
Once the camera switched off, they were funny as fuck, the pair of them, right? I said to Habib, all right then, I'll beat Umar up at billiards. He goes, he can't play billiards. And I went, neither can you. And then we're all just fucking pissing ourselves. And he went, I'm coming to England at the end of the year. I'll see you at the end of the year. And I went, all right, man, cool. So fingers crossed, we'll get something set up with him by the back end of the year, man. Yeah. Good times. Landing shops on Habib, eh? They're the most significant strikes anybody's landed on him.
There you go. And this brings me on to the next topic of conversation, which was something else that went on behind the scenes that no one would have seen that we want to talk about. And that is the fact that what Adam's just said there, efficient striking.
Yes.
Efficient grappling. So what happened was, we're on Fight Island. We finally got released after a couple of days quarantine. It was the night of the Max Holloway fight. We're rocking around. Next morning, all the judges and officials who have worked the fight the night before are obviously like, great, I can have a day or two to breathe now. I'm going to get down to the pool. I'm going to relax. So all the judges, officials that we know and whatever are all by the pool. And this is the first time we're seeing them. We get down there. And Mark Goddard, literally the best referee in the UFC, beelines for us and is like, right, you two, we're having a beer together. Because we're having a conversation about your podcast. And like, if you don't know Mark, if you've never, you know, been in Mark's company, Mark is larger than life, and he's like freaking 6'3" or whatever he is, built like a complete brick shit house, an absolute, you know, fucking
funny fucker.
JJ black belt, four MMA fighter. And as you say, you know, he's a wicked referee, but he takes this shit serious, man. Anyway,
but a couple of nights, he has got a wicked sense of humor as well, man.
He's a good laugh, man. So a couple of nights later, we end up having a few beers with Mark, didn't we? And we basically got ourselves a condensed version of Mark Goddard's acclaimed referee's course, all wrapped up. And we got it for the price of, what, 3 FS beers or whatever it was? What were we drinking?
3 Leffes.
Three Leffe beers. So if you ever bump into Mark Goddard in a bar and you're thinking, I can't get on his referee's course. It's about 200 quid and the waiting list is about 4 years long. You'd be easy getting a season ticket at Liverpool. But the way to do it is get into a bar when he's there and fill him full of beer and you'll get yourself a free referee's course. Because that's basically what we got. A free judging course is what we got. And I tell you what, mate, it was a wicked little eye-opener, wasn't it? It was good.
Mate, it was unreal. And I was so delighted that there was a contentious fight on Saturday, the Khalil Lowntree fight, right? On the coach on the way home, because when the announcement was made that Khalil had lost that fight, the crowd booed. The majority of the crowd booed. And all three judges had it 29-28 in the fight. And I'm sure there were people on social media going, how the fuck has that happened and all this type of stuff. I judged that fight. I sat in the back and I judged it properly. And when the fight finished, I went, Roundtree's lost that, 29-28, right? They announced it 29-28, unanimous that he lost it to the Polish kid. On the coach on the way home, I tapped Goddard and brings him over. I said, the Roundtree fight. And he goes, yes. Like, you know what he's like, stares me in the face. And I went, yes. And I went, 29-28 to the Polish kid. He went, yes. I went, that's how I scored it as well. And he went, fucking get in, lad. You've learned something. You're welcome. And he fucked off. It's all about, I suppose the key word is damage. You can't say the word damage officially, but the key word is damage in judging I like what Nick just said, I encourage anybody, if you want to learn of how to judge an MMA fight, get on his course. It's fascinating, mate. Absolutely fascinating. Learned so much of what judges are looking out for in particular fights. Effective grappling, effective striking. And if you...
Yeah.
There's so many fights now I want to go back and rewatch and try and correct my original scores from it and see if I see things differently now knowing the things that I know that Mark told me. Be interesting.
Yeah, man. I know now looking at certain fights where at the time I was like adamant one guy should have won. And I know now there's a couple of fights in my mind where I'm like, I know for a fact I scored that wrong then. Because, yeah, you know, there's also an element of defense, whereas in previously, prior to that conversation, and listen, when I was editor of Fighters Only, when they revised the unified rules, I read those unified rules. So it's different reading something in black and white that's basically like a formal document.
Yeah.
And having a one-on-one conversation with someone that basically helped write that document. So there's a massive difference because you can get it put in layman's terms and it's spelled out to you so much easier. But like the way you score boxing is not the way you should score an MMA fight. So I think anyone listening to this podcast now, and certainly watching us on BT Sport as well, is going to see an evolution of how we kind of call what some may consider controversial fights. Because I'd now like to think that I've got a different kind of approach. You know, defending a submission, getting out of a submission and getting back to your feet or whatever it may be, mm-hmm, as cool as that looks, and as much as the fans go mental when someone escapes like a deep rear naked choke, gets back to the feet and starts landing a couple of jabs, we all go mental because we're like, yeah, and he's still in the fight, brilliant, woo-hey, well done, mate. But in reality, he saved himself from being stopped. You don't score that. That's not a good thing. Guy was nearly finished on his, it was nearly submitted. So there's loads of little bits like that that I think both of us can take away moving forward. And yeah, man, it was a wicked little education. And as you say, it's more fans. And maybe this is something we do, maybe not here, but maybe something with BT Sport moving forward in terms of a bit of a layman's terms, fans guide to score and fight. Because I know a lot of MMA fans, UFC fans that have been watching the sport for years would have been as engrossed with that conversation,
mate,
as we were.
There's so many people that work in the media that need that course.
Excuse me. And fighters. I'm not being funny. And current UFC fighters, I guarantee if you had that conversation with them, they'd go, what, really?
Yeah.
Joking.
Mate.
Aren't you?
When you listen to Joe Rogan, and I love Joe Rogan, but when you listen to Joe Rogan commentate, it is quite obvious that he has not read the unified rules.
That's true, yeah.
Quite obvious.
Yeah, man.
And
we were Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Prior to that conversation, we were Joe Rogan.
Absolutely. And he is one of the biggest voices in MMA. Fans will watch his commentary and listen to what he says and think that he is the knowledge. You know what I mean? He's the guru. Yeah. What he says, oh, it must be right. It's wrong. A lot of it is wrong. Large percentages of it are wrong. And there were a conversation maybe 3-4 weeks ago that even DC, a guy that's just finished competing, didn't know of certain things of how what you're looking for regarding the scoring of a fight and what matters when it comes to the scoring of a fight. It's fascinating stuff, man. Fascinating stuff. Yeah. So expect us to never get a fight wrong again after our lesson from Mark Goddard.
And the one takeaway we should give to people to free was that golden word that you said earlier. And this is not a word you see in the rule book, but damage.
Yeah.
Judge a round on damage. Who took the most damage, whether it's in whether it's grappling, whether it's submission fighting, whether it's striking, doesn't matter. Which guy, how basic is that as well when you come away and go, well, of course, it's a fight, man. At the end of the day, it's a fight. Who gets the most damage in the space of 5 minutes? So it doesn't matter if one guy is boxing someone's socks off on the back foot, but hardly hitting them. You know, you're jabbing someone's head off, but you couldn't punch your way out of a paper bag, but you're jabbing them moving lovely, and you're going, oh, it's the sweet science, this is like watching amateur boxing. And then in the last 30 seconds, the guy who's getting his head jabbed off lands a massive elbow and six knees, and the guy's on the floor at the end of the round. Doesn't matter what went on for 4.5 minutes.
Who took the most damage?
The guy who took the most damage is the guy who loses the round. The guy who dished it out, or the girl, is the one who wins the round. So that was, it was an education.
There's other caveats as well that you add on to it, but the first and foremost thing that you're looking for is damage. That's the core.
Yeah, man.
But if they're them both Rock'em Sock'em robots. They're both knocking shit out of each other, and maybe one's had 2.5 minutes of dishing out damage, and the other one's had 2.5 minutes of damage dished out. There's loads of other bits then that you add on top of it. I'm not going to talk about it all because Mark charges good cash for it, all right? And we don't want to take his business away from him. But, mate, thank you so much. I know that he'll be listening. He'll be going, right, what are them two pricks up to today? That's 100% his thought process this morning, and he'll be listening. Mark, thank you very much. And you're welcome for the lefes as well, mate. Shall I tell me Sauna story?
Oh, fucking hell. Let me get comfortable. This is immense. Go on.
So, as I've explained, our work schedule was a little bit all over the place, mainly because of the time that the Conor fight was taking place, local time, Abu Dhabi. But he was walking to the octagon at like 9 a.m. It was fucking madness. So that then affects the rest of your week or your media obligations. So they become later in the day, like weigh-ins were later in the day, weren't they, and press conferences and all those types of things. So for me to do my normal day, quite different. So I thought, I need a bit of a pick-me-up. And I went to the sauna, right? Now, I love a sauna. You love a steam room, I love a sauna, right? Love a sauna. Now, obviously, with the situation that we've currently got in the world with social distancing and all that type of stuff, you can't just pile in. You've got to book your sauna spot and it's got to be vacant. So anyway, I turns up at the sauna and I says to the fella, how many people are in the sauna? And he goes, oh, yeah, I saw two people go in. Let me just check which bits they've gone in, whether they've gone sauna or steam room. So he goes in and we can see through the glass there's one guy in the steam room. You can't see anybody that's in the sauna. So the fella says to me, goes, oh, the other guy either must have left or he's in there. But that's okay because you're allowed two people at a time in and that's it. I said, all right, cool. So I get stripped off, don't I? Right? Got my swim trunks on, stripped off. I thought, right, I'm going in the sauna. Absolutely magic. Now I opens the door to the sauna. I can hear a bit of music playing. And then I look up and there's a fella in there, right? Now this fella is sat right in the middle of the sauna. He's easily 6'5", easily. And he is built like a brick shit house. He is absolutely gigantic. And he's naked. Right?
So think Terry Crews's bigger, younger brother.
Mm. Everybody's seen that meme that he's going around with the big dude with a massive cock. Everybody's seen that. Think that dude. He is the smallest hand towel protecting his nether regions. Everything else, his ass is on the bench. Everything, it's all out. Now, obviously that's intimidation, right? I'm intimidated when the door's open. And there's etiquette when you enter the sauna of don't leave that door open for too long because you're going to let all the hot air out and people are obviously in there for a reason. So you've got to make a quick split decision. Are you staying or are you going?
Are you a shithouse or are you man enough to enter?
Now, never one for backing down to a challenge. I thought, fuck it, I'm in, right? So I'm in with the big naked dude, right? I shuts the door. He scooches along. Just scoop. His ass just scrapes across the whole of the bench. Now, I've got to sit there. So I sits in and I looks up at the egg timer. There's an egg timer, obviously, it's for when you're in there and whatever, for how long you're supposed to be in. And I looked at it and I thought, right, thank fuck for that. He's nearly finished. His egg timer's nearly finished. He'll be off in a minute, this fella. And he's playing his music. He's enjoying himself. And he's playing his music out loud. They're not on headphones or anything. He's playing his tunes out loud, this dude, right? Doesn't say a fucking word to me, which makes it even more weird, this whole situation. So I'm sat there. You know what I'm like. I like a chat every now and again. I like to have a little bit of a conversation. But even me can read the room at this particular moment and thinks, this is not time for that type of conversation. Egg timer finishes. I looks at the guy. He hasn't spotted the egg timer, right? So I said, am I all right to just flip the egg timer around for my stint now, mate? And he looked at me and just went, So I flips it round, fully expecting him maybe to get up and crack on. Nope, he's not having it, is he? Not having it whatsoever. Instead, he pours more water on the coals to make the room even fucking hotter. This has now become a competition. Who's staying?
Tell everyone where the water bucket is as well.
The water bucket is in between his legs. So all the sweat off his body and his bollocks and his cock are dripping into this bucket. And he's then pouring it onto the coals, of which I'm then sat there breathing in. Never mind COVID. Never mind COVID. I was getting subliminally bummed off Terry Crews. Fuck me, man. Anyway, I stuck it out. I stuck it out. I went for it. Did the full 25 minutes. As I've finished, I goes to get up. Gets out, goes out, starts the towel down. He then comes out, doesn't he? Absolute bollock. Massive unit, just walking around. I've never got that. Do you know, like when you go to gym or something like that? There's some dudes that are just overly comfortable with being naked around other dudes, isn't there? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The type of guy that puts his leg up on the bench to dry his legs whilst his fucking cock's near enough in your face and stuff, and then continue the conversation.
Have a conversation.
Yeah. Fair enough. He wasn't having a conversation with me, but it was still incredibly intimidating. I know full well I'm going to end up on a meme now, aren't I? With that dude off Instagram or whatever he is. Yeah, so that was that. That was
But this isn't even the weirdest bit.
Good.
What did you do next?
Which bit?
Did you do after that when you went back to your room?
I didn't think
this is the weirdest bit.
I didn't think we were doing that. Right. So I'm not telling that. You fucking cunt. So that's happened. Now, I don't know about you, but whenever I've been in the sauna, or even hot, like sunbathing all day, it fucking makes me horny, man. Right? It does. Honestly, my missus is always on at me. Like whenever we sunbathe and stuff like that, that little sunburnt, crisp feeling, does it gets me going, gets me pumped. I'm in the mood for a little bit of a roll around. Anyway, so I've been in the sauna at this ridiculous temperature with Terry Crews. I've got back to my room and I feel quite horny. I don't know why. So I decide to pull myself around the room, don't I? You know what I mean? Knock one out.
Oh, man, it's sensational. So we were downstairs in the bar. We'd finished work for the day, you know, blah, blah. We were about to go for dinner and we're sitting having a beer. And Adam's the last one down, which is not like Adam. He's usually one of the first ones down because he's not doing his hair. He's good to go. And then you come down, like, where have you been? And you're like, yeah, I've been pulling myself around the room, you know, just get myself sorted for the night, clean the old pipes. And we're going, all right, okay, that's good. You know, just laughing. And then you just went, oh, let me tell you this story, though, about what happened in the sauna. And in my mind, I'm like, you're telling me this crazy story where you've just felt like you got physically
violated.
And mentally violated by a, you know, an absolute monster look, Terry Crews lookalike, in the sauna. And your next logical step was to go to your room.
And I'm a wank.
Man, issues, man.
I'm not right. I'm not right in the end. Yeah, but then, you start telling me a story about knocking one out. And then I'm like, what? No. Yes, mine's weird. Yours is next level weird. You're going to have to tell it. Go on.
I think mine's quite straightforward. I think most people can relate to mine.
No,
in regards that most people have got a Mile High Club type thing on their bucket list. You know, and if you're unfortunate enough to never be in a private jet with your wife or suitable other, then obviously there's a poor man's version that anyone can do on any kind of easy jet flight.
So Nick then proceeds to tell us a story. But in fact, straight after the Terry Crews chat, he just shouts at the top of his voice, "You ever had a wank on a plane?" And I went, "What?" I said, "No, mate." He goes, "What? Seriously?" Nobody in the group, not one person said, "Yeah, mate, I've not went out on a plane." And then he goes, "Oh, I have, yeah, absolutely. It's on the bucket list, isn't it? You're going to go not one out on a plane." Eh?
Right. That's what I thought, that was on everyone's bucket list. Weird. I think it's weirder that none of yous had.
Right.
Very strange.
If you listen to this podcast and you're thinking, everybody recommended these two to talk about fights and all this type of stuff. But this is how we start off. We'll get you in the mood, get you giggling. There's a bit of knowledge coming in a minute and behind the scenes from Fight Island. But just interact with us, please, on social media, just on those two particular stories. One, have you ever had a wank on a plane? Right? That's the question, if you can chuck that our way. Two, have you ever gone for a wank when you've been in the sauna naked with another man? That's it. They're just leaving it at that.
Oh, man. Jesus. Come on, let's talk about some fights quick.
Not fucking right, mate. Absolutely not right. Right, main event. Main event, main event, main event. All week, we were lucky to be around McGregor, lucky to be around Poirier. And all week, I don't think our brains changed, did they? I mean, it's very difficult. No. When you get a rematch, it's very difficult to make a logical explanation for the geezer that lost the first fight to then turn it around and do something as devastating as what Dustin Poirier did in what we saw at UFC 257. And my thought all week was, McGregor's talking the talk, he's focused, he looks the part, he's in, man. He's absolutely in the zone. And Dustin was in the zone, there's no doubt about that. Very different Dustin this time around, a lot cooler, a lot calmer, a lot more collected than what we saw at UFC 178. But I just couldn't see McGregor not getting his hand raised. I just couldn't see it.
No.
Not that it was anything against Dustin. Dustin's fucking mint. That version of McGregor has always in the past come through. Always.
Delivered. Mm-hmm.
That then kind of solidifies the magnitude of what Dustin did, man. Because that McGregor wasn't like, I'm on the piss McGregor. That was a proper McGregor. That was a proper version of Conor McGregor. Yeah, all right, maybe a little bit older and a geezer that wears silk pyjamas now or whatever. Is the fire there? All these questions are still going to run around with the fans. But that was a proper, fully focused, not fucking up to a different weight class on a week's notice. Not a guy that's been out drinking whiskey till all hours, not really training for Habib. That was legit. And Dustin Poirier deserves massive amounts of credit for dismantling him in the way he did, mate. It was unreal.
It was unreal. And, you know, even at the end of the first round, all week I didn't predict that. Even at the end of the first round, I couldn't have predicted that.
No, McGregor was mint.
Yes.
First round, he was really good.
Conor looked great in the first round. And yes, you know, in hindsight, you go, oh, yeah, now I can see the leg kicks because I'm looking for the leg kicks that did the damage.
Yeah.
But make no mistake, Conor won that first round. Conor's the one who was, you know, landing those big left hands. He was also landing good left hands to Dustin Poirier's stomach as well. And that was one thing I was like, oh, there you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Body shots. Yeah, that makes sense. You know,
couple of corkscrew right uppercuts as well were landing. His rights were beautiful.
A little bit of everything. Yeah. I thought Conor looked good. And then obviously in the second round, he missed with a series of overhand lefts, like literally full power left hands. And this is the thing with Conor. If you watch the first round, you watch the first 5 minutes and you go, that's vintage Conor McGregor. That's what he does. He wastes very little. Doesn't miss with much. Okay, he's not maybe not throwing as many shots as Dustin, but he doesn't miss anywhere near as much as Dustin. When he throws that left hand, it's very unusual that he misses with it, you know, boom. Then in that second round, we're a minute or two in, and then suddenly he whistles past two or three, like, big chilling left hands, and not even close, not even, like, skimming off Dustin's chin, like, wild missing them. And then he kind of fell up against the fence. And once you go up against the fence and you're squared on and Dustin Poirier is closing in on you, Dustin Poirier is no joke, man. He knows how to get the finish. And once Conor was squared up against that fence, Dustin just fucking went for it, didn't he? He just threw everything he had at him. And he was only landing one shot in every three or four punches. But it didn't matter because by then, you know, whether the knee injury was, you know, down to it or not, it doesn't matter. Well, sorry, I rephrase that. I don't like to call it an injury.
No, it was done injury by Poirier. Poirier
it
did
was
it.
Suffered in the fight, yeah. That's part of the game, you know. The injured leg to stop Conor having the mobility that he would have liked, that was by design.
Yep.
Dustin Poirier and his coach Mike Brown, they'd seen that and went, that's what we'll do. And to be fair to them, you know, Conor's a wide stance southpaw that reins in that left hand. He has that big karate-style wide stance.
Yep.
That's never really changed. So, for kicking away that front leg kick, you know, it's not like Mike Brown's reinvented the game of MMA.
No. Nope.
People have known for a long time that is a good way to get at Conor if you can land that leg kick. The thing is, no one's been able to land it like that before.
Yeah.
No one's been able to land with the kind of ferocity that Dustin did. So
I think it comes from the stances there. Just from a technical point of view,
yeah.
Two southpaws doing it. It's a different type of check when two southpaws are doing it. If he's fighting an orthodox fighter...
It's landing
fighter,
in a different place.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's landing
so if
in a
he's doing
place,
it,
yeah.
If an orthodox fighter's doing it, the check... I mean, if you watch Conor, he's trying to check it, but
yeah.
He's not going far enough around with the check. It's not bone on bone. It's on the muscle. So
yeah.
You land a couple of beauties there, mate. That's going to deaden that leg, of which what happened is immobilized now. Dustin Poirier can go to work, and he did the business.
Yeah, it was a wonderful performance. And I think, listen, when you look statistically as well, in the history of big rematches in the UFC, they very rarely go the same way as the
yeah.
first fight. That's
yeah.
the crazy thing. Like, you know,
yeah.
where the guys get...
Yeah, all that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, where the guys get better. Remember Jimmy Manoa got battered by Jan Blachowicz in the second fight.
Mm.
First fight, he just fucking smashed them to bits. So whether that's because the other guys got, you know, a lot more data to work on, whether it's because the original victor takes the fight lightly... You know, Conor McGregor could have fought anybody in this lightweight mix. The reason he chose Dustin Poirier is because he's already in Dustin Poirier's head, or at least he believes so from the first fight. That's why he hasn't fought a Gaethje or anybody else. You fight Dustin because, right, I've already beaten that guy. And Dustin, to be fair to Conor, Dustin's got wins over Dan Hooker. He's got wins over Justin Gaethje.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have put Conor at the number one spot in the division. So, you know, it was the perfect opponent for Conor to come back against. But again, I mentioned it on the post-fight show on BT Sport, and I'm adamant because it's something we've spoke about for a long time on this podcast. Conor McGregor, without 20,000 bonkers Irish fans following him to every single public engagement, without the world's media, because you're restricted on the number of media that can attend the Fight Island event or any event during this pandemic, without that kind of circus around him, Conor McGregor becomes a normal man. He becomes just another opponent. And Dustin Poirier mentioned it in the post-fight. He said, it wasn't like fighting Conor the first time. First time I fought Conor, it was like, Jesus Christ, this is bigger than I could ever imagine this sport ever being.
Mm.
And this guy's at the center of it, loving it. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Whereas he said, fighting him here on Fight Island, I spent 2 weeks in my hotel room. I was driving myself insane, but I was just sat there. There was no razzmatazz. It's not like he was walking around the hotel or going around the region and there was just Irish fans hanging out of every bar. And, you know, there was an insane amount of media obligations that he had. Mate, it was just behind closed doors, pretty much a behind closed doors fight. There was 2,000 fans in there or whatever it was on the night. Yes, they were largely Conor McGregor Irish fans, but they didn't make anywhere near the kind of a noise that was going to intimidate Dustin Poirier. I just think Conor has lost... There's a couple of things that, and I don't want to pour cold water on Dustin's performance, far from it. He was outstanding. But I just think Conor McGregor, without the chaos, without the show, without the drama, without the focus, he loses that one round advantage. And I also want to speak about what you think about Conor 2.0, or this may even be Conor 3.0, family man Conor, friendly, turning up early for interviews, like, super professional, the businessman Conor. Can he ever be as ferocious inside the octagon as he once was before? Because he hasn't got that arrogance.
Mm.
He doesn't dance into press conferences late and go, I don't give a fuck that champ does what he wants. He's not that guy no more.
No, he's not. And I think the thing is that the first time around, his sole focus was MMA. He didn't have whiskeys. He didn't have boxing. He wasn't a business dude. He had other dudes doing those things for him. It was being built at that particular time. He was the guy coming through. My sole focus is MMA. It's my life. This is all I want to do. I want to be the guy in the UFC that becomes the first simultaneous world champion like I did at Cage Warriors. So when you're solely focused on something and only working on those things, then you kind of cater for just that. Now he's catering for so many other things. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's a great thing. Of course, you should have thought processes and businesses and all these types of things outside the octagon because there's much more to life than that. He's a very rich, wealthy dude. My thing that I noticed is the way that he fought, even in the first round. Now, when you go back, and he's winning the first round, he lands brilliant in the first round. But Conor traditionally is very light on his feet. He's got that wide karate stance, as you say. But his hands are also low. His hands are also low, and therefore his shots come from all these crazy different angles. If you actually watch him now, he was using a peekaboo guard, mate. He was using
a boxer.
Yeah, that's what he was that's what he's quite obviously training towards. And we'll give you some inside information on this in a minute. But when you look at him now, he's still got the wide stance, the karate stance, but he's got a peekaboo guard, which kind of, it's... I don't know what the word is. It stops him from being able to see those leg kicks. He's blocking his own vision in a way. Low hands, he can see everything. He can anticipate everything. He can see tells. He can read little twitches and all those types of things. When you peekaboo guard it, you kind of block your vision from certain things. In the world of boxing, as he said, you don't get kicks. So therefore, he doesn't have to consider that. And it was it was the kicks in this particular fight that obviously caused that damage, of which then allowed Dustin Poirier to go and do his business. Fair play, Dustin Poirier. Absolutely bang on.
On Sunday morning, though, as well, you know, it was only on the replay I watched on the plane. I think his stance is slightly tighter as well. I don't think it's as wide as it once was.
Mm.
You know, he used to have this super wide stance and this real like laid back,
loose,
flow state karateka style, you know, striker stance, which he kind of developed with training a lot with Gunny Nelson and stuff like that. But now, His feet definitely are much closer together, which obviously has changed the way his balance, changed the way slightly he does check those kicks. But as you say, this is not the same Conor McGregor. He's changed his stance. He's changed his fundamentals to suit him in the current climate and what he wants to do with his professional prize fighter career.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether you can straddle two sports the way he thinks he's able to.
And that's it. And he was straddling it. So a little bit of inside information. And this is information coming from people close to the situation who knew what was going to happen. Lots of chat about Conor McGregor, Manny Pacquiao. Lots of chat. It was real chat. What was going to happen? And we're not talking back end of the year and Conor's going to go for a run in the UFC and all this type of stuff. It was happening next. That fight was done, signed, sealed, delivered. The big questions were, is off the back of the weekend, did Conor feel comfortable getting down to 155? And if he did, could they go down to 147? Could they go and fight at welterweight? That was one of the questions surrounding the finalization of the agreement with Manny Pacquiao. And if so, could they then blag the WBA? And this is legit conversation. Could they then blag the WBA that Conor McGregor fights Manny Pacquiao for the welterweight championship of the world? That was one of Conor's ambitions, and it was all that. Those were the questions that were building up towards this. As I've just mentioned there regarding his techniques and what he was working on, quite evidently he's been working heavily on boxing, trying to sharpen up from what he did from the Mayweather fight, because he wants to compete with Manny and hopefully, in his own ambitions, try and become that world champion over in the world of boxing. That's now gone. What happened at the weekend has now derailed that massively. And you're seeing the conversations of Ryan Garcia shooting his shot, wanting the Manny Pacquiao fight. Listen, crack on, whatever. It's going to be interesting to see what happens next with Conor. Because what would have happened at the weekend if he wins is that he's in an unbelievable position with great leverage. Because he wants activity. He wants world titles. He wants gold. Don't need to be here for money. He's got shitloads of money. He wants to do shit that nobody's done before. And I'm adamant that that's his legit reasons for being here. He wanted to win at the weekend in devastating fashion, go to the UFC and say, right, I am now the guy. Either Habib comes back and fights me next for the world title, or you strip him and I fight for the world title and we do this in April. If the answer is no at that point, Conor McGregor was going to go and fight Manny Pacquiao. That is what was going to happen at that point. But now we have a situation of, well, what does he do next? Because the Pacquiao fight, you would think he's dead in the water. The interest wouldn't be there as much as it would be from a win over Dustin. And he's most certainly not getting a shot at the UFC lightweight title. So what does he do next, Commissioner?
I think you're right. I think the Pacquiao thing has got to be dead now more than anything because he got knocked out, you know, and previous losses on, no one's ever, obviously Mayweather aside, no one's ever done that to Conor in mixed martial arts. He's lost fights before, but they've all been by submission. No one's ever knocked him out before. Dustin Poirier knocked.
There's always narratives of, well, he took a last minute fight. He's gone up to welterweight with Nate. There's always that.
Yeah.
There's always a reason.
Of course.
Or Habib, he's just been on the lash for 18 months. You know what I mean?
But again, just the fact that they were all submission defeats.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can argue, yeah, man, cool. Listen, we all know Conor's got a hole in his game in MMA, but that's maybe why he's ready now to fight for the boxing world title, because he's all about the hands. Screw everything else. He's got a great, everything.
Yeah.
There's a narrative there that you can sell. But there's now he's been knocked out. It makes the Pacquiao fight nowhere near what it could have been had he won.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any point risking it at this point. And I think Conor's gotta go away and have a look at himself in the mirror and think about whether he does want to do this anymore, because he is a very, very wealthy man with lots of other stuff going on.
Yeah.
But he will need to come back to MMA first, right the wrong of the Dustin Poirier defeat, put two or three wins together. And if he puts two or three wins together, chances are the third fight's for the title. So if he can do it, but he's got to do it against a certain level of competition to get that title shot. The only good thing for Conor McGregor right now is Dustin Poirier, with Habib gone, looks like the best lightweight on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back to that conversation in a second. There's a narrative with Dustin Poirier about a third fight. They've both got to win each. They've both got to knock out each.
Yeah.
So the fight with Conor McGregor, the trilogy fight, will never go away. And Dustin Poirier even alluded to himself when he was saying, what do you want to do next? Do you want to do Chandler? Blah. And he was like, no interest in Chandler. No interest in Gaethje. I want the title. In fact, make me an offer. Would I do Conor again? Yep, I'll do Conor next. No shit, Sherlock. You've just absolutely beat Conor. So your confidence is flying. So the fight with Conor, the third fight's definitely not far away. But Conor first has got to come back in MMA. He's got to prove himself.
There's two fights, mate. There's two fights.
It's got to be Nate Diaz or it's got to be Tony Ferguson. Let's be honest.
There you go.
There's a narrative with Tony Ferguson that we can sell. Tony Ferguson is still Tony Ferguson, even though he lost his last two fights. And most people in the industry, myself included, feel like Tony Ferguson is done now. He's finished. So that would be a perfect fight for Conor McGregor, because he's a name. The fans will get behind it. And chances are Conor does what the two previous opponents have just done to him as well. The other option, of course, is the Nate Diaz trilogy fight as well. But again, Conor, to keep the dream of Pacquiao, keep the dream of UFC title goal again, that fight would have to be at 155 pounds against Nate Diaz.
Yep.
And will we get Nate Diaz back down to 155? So there's loads of conversations going on, loads of options. But, Conor's in a situation now where, he can't lose again. He can't lose to a Tony Ferguson or a Nate Diaz, because then the wheels are completely off.
Yeah, yeah.
But if he comes back and beats one of those guys, maybe both of those guys this year, I think there's a way back in with Pacquiao in 2022.
Well, I kind of want to part the Pacquiao thing for a second. There's a lot of money there. Of course there is. And the temptation will always be there. But from an MMA point of view and a UFC point of view, if he comes back, right, and he beats Tony or Nate, and I'm talking in relatively quick time. Go away, dust yourself off, get yourself sorted. Focus purely just on the UFC and MMA. April, May time, get back in the octagon, fight Tony or Nate. Try and get a win there. Get a win there. I think what he could do is set up the other one. So if he fights Tony in May, he could set up Nate 3. And then by the end of the year, Dustin 3 could be on. Because I think...
Yeah.
I mean, listen, Dustin has got a tough fight on his hands. I think as the commissioner, you want to make Dustin versus Charles Oliveira, don't you, for the title? And I think that makes sense for the majority of people.
Yes.
It's a tough old fight. But the Dustin 3 fight, I think everybody's in, but there has to be a build-up to it. I don't think it's next. I think there's got to be Tony, Nate maybe in there. Conor. If he's devastating in one of them, Dustin for mega money for the title, that's massive. And then if he comes through all them... You've got Habib. Mate, there's loads of options. It's not over.
Pacquiao.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Pacquiao.
It's far from over. People thinking, he's done. No, he's not done. Conor McGregor has risen from the flames fucking more times than a phoenix, mate. He knows what he's doing. He knows the... Yeah. Immediately after that fight, he knew the wrongs. Straight away, he knew the wrongs. It's whether he wants to go and change them. Whether he wants to go and change this narrative. He doesn't need to. The door's there, man. It's all sorted. If he wants to change that narrative, I believe he can. It's just whether he wants to go and do that. That's all.
It's hard work when you've got that much money.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, wait a minute. The oven's just pinged here. One sec.
Eh?
Yeah. The oven's just pinged. One sec. Let me just get this out.
All right.
Put these oven gloves on.
You made a pie for me, have you? You made a pie?
There it is.
Just wait
here
a minute.
It is. Look at this.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Before you do that, I'll enter the room. Beep, beep, beep. Just reversing here. I'm just doing a bit of reversing.
Reverse your, beep, your big ass in.
Beep,
yeah.
Beep, beep.
There you go, Mr. Mr. Casserole. One nice big slice of humble pie. Mm. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Full of shit.
Listen, I am now retiring from all fight predictions. You will never hear me make any reference to anybody win, lose, or draw a fight ever again. It's just never going to happen. Michael Chandler's pulled my pants down. He slapped my ass all over Abu Dhabi. Ben Chilliberty, our mate at UFC, sat there now laughing his bollocks off. Literally, within 10... He wasn't on Fight Island, was Ben. Within 10 seconds of Chandler winning, my phone vibrated in my pocket and I knew exactly who the fuck it was, right? I picked it up. He didn't even say anything. All he sent me was a gif of Kermit the Frog drinking tea. That's all he sent me. Oh, you
let me I'll just rewind this phone to when Chandler sat this pod. This is a podcast that we did when Adam reacted to Michael Chandler signing with the UFC.
Yeah. So wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is when he signed. It's before I met him. It's before I saw him. It's before I spent any time with him. When he signed. Yes.
Oh, that cock, Michael Chandler in UFC. He's got no chance. He won't even beat anyone in top 10, he won't.
So how long have I sounded like fucking Keith Lemon? I did say that. Listen,
that's what you said.
What I said, I'll tell you exactly what I said, right? Because I know what I said. I said, this man is going to struggle to compete with anybody in the top 10 of the UFC. And then I went on and said, he definitely, that's the word I used, he definitely does not beat anybody in the top five. I said he struggles with the whole of the top 10. He definitely doesn't beat anybody in the top five. Michael Chandler might be the fucking best of the lot, mate. What a debut. I don't think any of us have ever seen a debut like that. We fell for him on Fight Island 2. His interviews were amazing. He talks the talk. You can't help but want the guy to do well. You can't help but want the guy to be successful, right? Fight Island 3, he carries on this narrative. You can't help but want Michael Chandler to do well. Having spent any time in his company, you think, you're mustard, mate. You're absolutely mustard. And even throughout the course of the week, we spent time with Dan Hooker. We spent time with Michael Chandler. I didn't change my thought. I said, Dan Hooker's still winning this fight. I'm not going to change. I'm not going to be a shithouse. I'm not going to go back on myself. Dan Hooker's still winning this fight. I sat down in my seat and fucking hell fire. The minute the fight started, I went, this is not going to end well for me, this. I can tell now.
For me. Never mind Dan Hooker.
Never mind Dan Hooker. This is not ending well for me right now. Because that dude is the fucking real deal. Wow, man. What a debut. What a debut.
What a just a sensational debut. What a beep, statement that was.
Beep, beep, beep. I'm leaving the room, mate. I'm leaving.
Just to the rest of the lightweight world, just like, boom, mate, I'm here, I'm here to play, I'm here to do something. And just to deal with Dan, no one's ever done that to Dan Hooker. No one's ever smashed Dan Hooker to bits in one round in the manner that Michael Chandler did at the weekend. That was absolutely brilliant stuff, absolutely brilliant. Couldn't take your eyes off it. You know, you blink, you miss it. What a dream debut. And literally, he comes across as the nicest fella in the world. We've been lucky enough to be around him around two Fight Island camps now. And you only want good things for him. And to be honest with you, he's the guy that if Khabib had indeed said, someone impressed me and I'll come back and fight them. Had he actually said that, and you know, Dana obviously waxing, you know, extending the truth a little bit. Had he actually said, I want one person to impress me and I'll come back, I guarantee Michael Chandler will be fighting Khabib next for the title. Because Poirier's been there, McGregor's been there, Gaethje's been there. Most of these guys have took their shot at Khabib.
Yeah.
But Michael Chandler has never had the opportunity. And Michael Chandler has got the level of American collegiate, all-American wrestling base that no other previous opponent has. And listen, before the Khabib fanboys come out and go, ah, you said that about Gaethje.
Yeah.
And the difference is, Michael Chandler actually uses his wrestling now,
yeah,
as well as his striking. He chains it together brilliantly. He is a completely different proposition. Do I think he beats Khabib? Of course I don't, man.
No.
Khabib's the best.
I don't think he beats Dustin. I don't think he beats Dustin. But what I will say is this.
Get the opportunities.
Mate, what I want to see now, I mean, your tournament's fucking red hot now. Red hot.
Yeah.
The fight, Khabib's gone. I don't care what anybody says. He ain't coming back, right? Me and him are sorting out the billiards rematch. That's the big rematch that everybody's talking about. Poirier, Oliveira, title fight next. Yeah. Same card. Same card.
Yes. Co-main.
Put on Chandler Gaethje. Put that on.
Bingo.
Right? Retribution for Gaethje. A win there. He gets himself straight back in. We can go again with Poirier. He's a better fighter now than he was when Poirier beat him. Blah, 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 blah. Chandler starches Gaethje. It's a title fight, man. Done.
100%.
Fuck me.
100%.
Fuck me.
Amazing.
Michael Chandler.
And I know originally on the
Michael
original
Chandler,
bracket before the fight.
I just want to go on record. Michael Chandler's now my new favourite fighter. Wow, yeah, man. Wow. Honestly, sometimes, and people won't believe me with this, I actually like being proved massively wrong.
Of course.
It's the beauty of sport. If I sat there and went, this, and this is going to happen, and it'd be boring after a bit. I picked five. We all do it, don't we? We have our little WhatsApp group, and we tried to pick the winners of the five fights on the main card. I got two right.
Everyone did.
Yeah.
Not one person. Five or six of us in our group. And we all chose a winner from the top five.
And method.
And not one of us got more than two winners right. Never mind the method.
Yeah.
Two winners right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That just shows you what the UFC is all about at the highest level. I guarantee if I predicted the top five fights on every boxing match from now until the end of the year, I'm almost certain I wouldn't get worse than two correct in every boxing match.
Yeah,
because
listen,
the main event, co-main event in big events like AJ and all that. Yeah, of course, there's potential to be wrong in the main event and maybe even the co-main.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little cheeky one on the undercard. But I guarantee I would get two of the top five of every single boxing event from now until the end of the year correct because the fights just aren't that challenging. In the UFC, man, it's no surprise.
Yeah.
Because, listen, Amanda Ribas was sensational. She had us eating out the palm of her hand. I said it again. I said it all week. We were all like, my God, she's a little superstar. Marina Rodriguez got in there and knocked her the fuck out. And that's MMA. Isn't it? That's just MMA, baby.
Just on it.
That's the way it is.
She didn't knock her out once. She knocked her out twice, mate. Herb loved it, didn't he? He went, I want to see it again, man. Carry on. To be fair to Herb, and I know that he gets a bad rap sometimes, he never waved it off. He did get a touch close. He did get a touch close.
He probably should have.
Yeah.
He probably should have.
He should have. He should have.
So it's up to Marina Rodriguez just to finish it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Make the ref drag. Make the referee drag you off.
I completely agree. Like what you've just said, he should have. He didn't. Make him drag you off. Simple as that. But what a fucking night, man. That main card was unreal. Yeah. Muradov, he's fucking a tasty piece of kit, isn't he? Absolute tasty piece of kit. And Giorgio looked good, man. Giorgio was great all week. I love talking to Giorgio because all week normally with Giorgio, it's a bit nicey-nicey. I don't want nicey-nicey. Come on, man. We've said it on the podcast. Go full fucking Begbie. Let's go, Giorgio, yeah? And she had it, man. She was like, I just want to fucking take it out on her face. So I'm going, yeah, let's go. Brilliant. And there were moments in there where she had to come over adversity because Jessica Rai tried to bully her a little bit in the grappling exchanges and what have you. But when she turned it into a Muay Thai fight, fucking Giorgio looked great, mate. Really good.
She did. She looked mega. It was a mega card. And even there was wicked bits on the prelims, though, as well. It was amazing, man. It was just an amazing experience to be on Fight Island. The Wednesday night card as well was just wicked.
Yeah.
Being around it all. Great win for Lerone Murphy, as I say.
Looked good.
Hell of a baptism of fire for Mason Jones, but he'll be all the better for it. You know, I think Mason, we've seen him. He was on our flight on the way home and stuff. You'd see straight away he was in good spirits. And I spoke to him backstage after the fight and he was like, mate, I thought completely the wrong fight. I don't know what the hell I was doing. The best thing was I interviewed him. I think BT put it out.
Yeah.
I interviewed him for about 10, 15 minutes. I think I asked him three questions.
Yeah.
The kid's got it. He knows what the media wants. They want honesty and they want you to talk and they want you to be you. And Mason Jones knows how to sell Mason Jones. And he will 100%. Put it this way. He'll achieve more in this sport than Mike Davis will. No, I don't mean to knock Mike Davis,
yeah,
who beat him on Wednesday night. But Mason Jones is going places. Kid just needed that L. It's gone now. It's got an L on his record. Sound. Yeah. Get him out again. Get him out soon. Hopefully he gets out sometime in the spring or early summer, because you won't see many L's on Mason Jones' record in the UFC, that's for sure.
Listen, get ready for a serious bit of matchmaking for Lerone Murphy, right? Because Nick he's joined the management team. This was fucking well funny. So I've done my interview with Dana. Nick's in the room. We're all having a bit of a chat afterwards. And Dana, I love conversations off camera with Dana. He's piss funny. Absolutely hilarious. Yeah. He just gives you all the information that you want to give. And then he says, don't tell anybody. Are you taking the piss?
Yeah.
You don't want me to tell anybody what you've just told me. Right. Anyway, there was a moment as Dana's just having a chat about various bits. Nick jumps up and he goes, big one tonight, Dana, Lerone Murphy. He goes, yeah. I don't know too much about that kid. Nick then spills the whole bullet chewer story. Boomf, off he goes. Dana's captivated. Dana's like going, fuck, man, I'm pumped for this guy. I'm right in there. Lerone obviously puts in a great performance, goes and sees Dana at the end of it, expects some serious matchmaking. And Nick Pete in the next fucking commissioner press conference asking for 20%. There you go. That's how he's rolling. Dana was high on him, man, after that conversation, yeah, though. He was in.
Dana, he spat the bullets out. It was a flash knockdown. Wow. No, Dana, he spat the bullets out and got up. A flash. I said it twice.
Three. Cracked the same joke three times. Dana, I'm cracking a joke now, man. Fucking mega.
Oh, Jesus.
I've pitched my new TV show. Dana, search, looking for a streamer. Pirates of Fight Island. But I pitched it
he
to him.
Next,
yeah, he buzzed. Yeah, he buzzed off that. He came to see us after the, was it the weigh-in? It must have been the Friday. Yeah, it was the Friday. He came over. He made a beeline for us. He wasn't supposed to do an interview with us, but he came over and made a beeline for us. He goes, hey, comes over. Did you guys put that interview out that we did yesterday? I don't know why I'm doing a fake fucking American accent. He goes, did you guys put that interview out that we did the other day about the Pirates? And I went, yeah. He goes, did you, what did you say? I said, well, you know what we said. You did the interview and we fucking stuck it out. He goes, yeah, but what about the stuff afterwards that I was telling you about? The intricacies of where this guy was and all this type of stuff. I said, no, we've not put that out. Nobody knows anything about that. He goes, well, check this out. Dana then gets his phone out and he goes, the motherfucker messaged me, shitting his pants, telling me that he wasn't going to put the stream up. Blah, 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 blah. And he went off and showed these messages and whatever. And I went, fucking hell. Wow. He goes, I said, can we do an interview on that now? And he goes, no, because I want to catch fucking more of them tomorrow, man. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll give you an update. And I went, fucking hell. He's going for you. If you're involved in this illegal streaming gear, beware. Yeah. Because this dude is, he's gone full Liam Neeson. He's coming for you, man. Don't fucking get involved with it. Because if he catches you, he'll fucking go big on you.
Yeah, it's bad, isn't it, man? But if you think about that business and how it makes its money, it's a pay-per-view-driven business, of course.
Yeah.
You know, the TV deals bring in revenue, big revenue, but it's all based on pay-per-view. Hence the reason why he was desperate to make... let's be honest, he wanted Conor to win so he could force Conor versus Khabib too.
Yeah.
Because Conor Khabib too would have done astronomical numbers. And he'd have been fighting Khabib every inch to try and get that fight to happen. So you better believe... Dana and the UFC are in this business to make money, and that's how they make their money. So for their business, I guarantee the biggest loss they have is streaming.
Yeah.
It costs them hundreds of millions of dollars every year. Mm-hmm. So it was inevitable at some stage that Dana was going to go after the streamers.
Yeah.
And now, you know, he believes the stuff he was saying, that the technology is there on a global scale to be able to literally pick people's IP addresses, even though they've been scrambled and all that kind of nonsense, and get these people. So it's going to be interesting, man, because I tell you what, the first person that they're ready to get that does stream it, you'll know about it, because it'll be everywhere. UFC, we'll put that out to every single agency and every single media member, and everyone will have to follow up on the story, because whoever gets caught is going to end up doing jail time, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Because they're going to throw everything at them.
That's not the TV idea, though. The TV idea, though, is me and Dana, John Jones maybe on boats with automatic weapons
like
and shit.
Like a Miami Vice type
thing. Yeah,
just going around.
Yeah, that's what we want, man. I want to be in helicopters. I want to be proper full-on FBI. And the minute someone uploads an illegal stream, I want Dana to kick the fucking doors in. Rah, gotcha, buddy. You're fucked. Like proper Dog the Bounty Hunter shit. You know what I mean? That's what I want it to be. Dana White, looking for a streamer. It's on, man. It's on. That's the new TV idea. Coming to BT Sports soon. I'm telling you.
Be wicked.
Listen, thank you very much for getting stuck into us. We've got a week off this week, haven't we? Because it's Nicholas's birthday at the weekend. How old are you this week? How old are you this week?
29.
Yeah. And then we're back in at Vegas. The UFC are back doing their thing. We're only about 3 weeks away from the next fucking big title fight between Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns. They're coming thick and fast, man. They don't piss about the UFC. They are bringing you big fights constantly. March is absolutely stacked. And expect something. I would expect something in the lightweight division of sizable note. April, May, mate. I really would.
Yeah. Yeah, especially because Dustin, you know, was relatively unscathed there. So I think that, you know, we know the semifinals now. They're laid out. Dustin Oliveira, Chandler Gaethje as co-main. Let's do it in May.
Mm.
Let's get this lightweight elimination tournament sorted out. And even though I think the winner of you know, we'll have a new champion by then, I think there's still a defining final fight to distinguish who is the pound for pound number one lightweight in the world. But it's one of them four.
Mm. There you go. We apologize once again for not dishing out the drunk podcast. I think we're gonna have to curb that down now that obviously he's holding such a prestigious position with the UFC as the commissioner.
I am the UFC official commissioner now, yet so I need to cut back on the drunk podcast, and unfortunately,
yeah, there you go.
Sorry about that.
But hopefully you got enough out of the sauna story and various other bits that we sprinkled into today's show. And, of course, a little bit of review of what's going on with the UFC. Fingers crossed we managed to get you a little bit closer to Fight Island with the stuff that we were doing on BT Sport. Thank you very much for all your nice comments that you've thrown our way. We do appreciate it. And we hope to be bringing you more stuff in the not-too-distant future on all UFC shows. There will be a boxing podcast this week, because I know there's a lot gone on in the world of boxing. I have kept up to it. There's not too many shows to talk about, but there has been a lot to get stuck in. Avni Yildirim will feature highly on the boxing show, no doubt, this week. Mm-hmm. So make sure you subscribe to our stuff. We will get that out to you in the next 24 hours. You can do it via iTunes. You can do it via our website, fightdisciples.com. All our social media is there. Please follow us. And our YouTube channel there as well. And we'll try and get some videos up as well pretty soon. Thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you next time. Cool. Big one.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.